Our next case of the day is number 063636, Gabriel against Hamlin et al. Ms. Clinton, I think we can proceed.
May it please the court.
You smell anything burning, though.
I will be sure to mention. My name is Barbara Kleinheit, and I'm honored to be here today to speak on behalf of Amilcar Gabriel. As you know, there was an order entered dismissing his case for want of prosecution, and the dismissal was with prejudice. We're here because we believe that that order was not justified by the circumstances of this case. I was the trial attorney in this case, and we've set forth in our brief all of the efforts we made to try this case in a timely fashion and to comply with court orders. We had prepared the case and were ready for trial when it was first set for trial in July 2005. It was continued a number of occasions on the court's own motion, on the defendant's motion, and each time plaintiff adjusted, prepared, and was ready for trial. It was finally set for trial to start the week of September 20th, 2005, and finish the following week. And at that point, plaintiff was prepared to proceed to trial, and we expected to proceed when the court entered an order a week before trial, changing the trial dates from 2 weeks, 3 days each week, to being completed entirely in the week of September 19th. That's when I ran into a problem with my expert not being available. He had not been available the week of September 19th, and I had scheduled his testimony for the week of September 27th because that was our understanding. We would be going 6 days during 2 weeks. We filed a motion to continue trial, and in the alternative, a motion for voluntary dismissal, setting forth the problem was the expert. At that point, an order was entered, which is a little troubling. The court decided that plaintiff's expert had been barred by an order entered by Magistrate Judge Frazier. And we filed a motion for reconsideration, pointing out that we had filed a motion to reopen discovery and for additional time to disclose the expert's report. It had been granted. But I do want to inform this court, this has been bothering me ever since the order was entered dismissing the case with prejudice. With the advantage of hindsight looking back, I do wish we had put in our motion to reopen a request to vacate the order barring the experts. It would have certainly avoided confusion on the part of the trial court. But
your argument today is that just under the circumstances, it was pretty obvious that that order was.
I felt it was at the time.
If you're going to be given more time to engage in discussion.
Yes, I thought at the time that it was clear. I think part of the confusion was when I filed the motion to reopen, Magistrate Judge Frazier had entered the order barring the expert, and I had thought he would be getting that motion and deciding it. Instead, Judge Steele ruled on the motion. And so, looking back on it, I wish I had mentioned the order barring expert because Judge Steele probably wasn't aware of it.
But the Judge Steele's order granting the motion to reopen discovery specifically directs the parties to consult and agree on a date on or before September 30th, 2004, to take the deposition of the treating physician, which is what your expert physician needed in order to complete his report,
right.
And that was the whole basis for the motion to reopen, as I understand it, because Dr. Garcia had been difficult to schedule.
Yes, and I think Judge Steele order recognized that the plaintiff had a reasonable basis for extension of time to complete that discovery and to provide the expert's report. And we had provided his opinions, his qualifications, and everything in answers to supplemental interrogatories and also a Rule 26 opinion witness disclosure. So it wasn't that we hadn't done anything. I tried so hard during the case to comply in spite of the fact that I kept running into a problem with the attorney for Dr. Garcia not cooperating and scheduling his deposition. And I think that really was the holdup through the whole case. Everything else we managed to complete. It was just that one deposition that created problems for us, and he was represented by counsel. So I had to deal with counsel from Heil Royster to get that deposition out of the way. And I think Judge Steele recognized that that's a legitimate basis for needing more time and a legitimate basis for allowing the expert to review that report and then that deposition and then provide his report. And from the point where the motion to reopen was granted, it seems to me from the record, everyone understood that Dr. Luan was then going to testify. At that point, the pretrial order was considered by the court. It listed Dr. Luan. Nobody objected to his testimony. In fact, in the motion to reconsider, I pointed out to Judge Steele that the motion to reopen had been granted, Dr. Luan was no longer barred, and counsel for Doar, Hamlin, and Wisely came forthright in their response and said it was their understanding Dr. Luan was no longer barred. And the only ones who contest that at this point are Dr. Ruiz and Wexford Health Sources. But they never objected to the pretrial order listing him as an expert, and I believe at that point, at the time of trial, they expected him to testify too. I have to confess that I don't understand why there was a dismissal with prejudice, because this is not a case where we repeatedly asked for continuances. We were ready for trial a week before trial, and we're ready to proceed. I think it was just the circumstances that the court developed a conflict at the last minute. We received 1 week's notice of the change in trial dates, and it simply wasn't enough for us to get Dr. Luan to change his schedule. He was locked in. I think under the circumstances, especially with the court changing the dates at the last minute, it was an abuse of discretion not to grant a continuance of the trial. There is some mention that the defendants would have been prejudiced. I don't see where they would have suffered a significant prejudice with a continuance. Each of them listed their witnesses in the pretrial order. Wexford and Dr. Ruiz were only going to call Dr. Ruiz. The other defendants from the correctional center, Hamlin, Wisely, and Doar, listed correctional center employees and inmates as their witnesses, and I don't see how those would have become unavailable or difficult to locate. And the defendants had already been granted a continuance of the trial, and I felt like the court had exercised its discretion in their favor to grant a continuance, and under the circumstances, in all fairness, we should have been given one continuance. The other thing I wanted to point out is that according to the case law cited in our brief, a dismissal with prejudice for failure to prosecute should be based upon a course of conduct of needless delays. And in our case, every time we requested more time for discovery, we had reasons we set forth. Primarily, Dr. Ruiz didn't give his deposition until March 04, which was just before the discovery cutoff. We didn't needlessly delay, I don't believe. I feel the plaintiff prosecuted his case, was ready for trial, and that the delays that did take place were necessary. If there are no questions, then thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clinton. We'll hear now from Mr. Unrath.
Thank you very much. I represent Dr. Ruiz and Wexford Health Sources. It's clear that there was some confusion as to whether Dr. Lewin was still a witness in this case. The magistrate judge granted our motion to bar. 1 year later, 5 days before trial, plaintiff's counsel comes forward and says, I need an extension of time. I need a continuance because Dr. Lewin's not available. Now,
you're leaving out everything that happened in between those two events.
Yes, I know.
And which is important.
And I think that you raised a very good point when you mentioned that the order granting the motion to reopen discovery specifically contemplates the fact that there will be an expert that will be reviewing Dr. Garcia's report. That's actually quite prescient as far as I'm concerned. When you look at the motion to reopen discovery, it's not at all clear what it is they're asking for. The first paragraph, we need time to depose Dr. Alfred Garcia and provide his expert's Rule 26 report. Now, is that Dr. Garcia's report or is that Mr. Gabriel's
Dr.
expert
Garcia
report?
Dr. Garcia is the treating physician, and everybody knows that.
I suppose we do, but we have this has been handled by a magistrate judge, and now it's up to the district court judge's ruling on this. Now, I have no doubt that there was some confusion here.
If there is, why shouldn't that be resolved in favor of the plaintiff here?
Because
I think there is confusion, and it seems to me once the district court opened up things up here that this magistrate order was really not much involved in the case anymore.
I think that there's a very good reason we should not place this confusion at Judge Steele's doorstep. And I tell you, the main reason for that is this. We look first toward this motion to reopen discovery. Dr. Lewin's name is mentioned nowhere in there. Counsel, I have to admit, conceded that she should have filed a motion to vacate the magistrate judge's ruling. And she's correct, and I thank her for bringing that up. I think that what we're missing here is this. The federal rules have a procedure in place for vacating a magistrate judge's ruling. That procedure was not followed. This resulted in the confusion that we have here. It should be laid, to the extent that there was confusion, it should be laid at plaintiff's counsel's doorstep, not Judge Steele's.
Well, Dr. Lewin was listed on the witness list and in the Rule 26 report, as I understand it, and everyone knew, certainly as of that time, that he was going to be the plaintiff's expert.
The pretrial order was entered simultaneously on the same day at the same telephone conference hearing as the order granting the motion to bar the witness.
And he's listed by name.
Yes, he is. Now, the order, Judge Steele could have done better and said, yes, I bar this witness and I grant this order. Please make this change. He didn't. He made it clear to everyone, the magistrate judge, I'm sorry, not Judge Steele, barred the witness and approved the pretrial order in the same hearing. And I think that's a little bit different than looking at this pretrial order a month or two later.
Now, well, certainly by the time the motion for the continuance is brought, everybody understands that Dr. Lewin is the plaintiff's expert, and that was the reason for the continuance?
Everyone but Judge Steele. And there is nothing in this motion to reopen the discovery that even mentions Dr. Lewin. Now, I think it's also...
His name is in the record as the plaintiff's expert. And Judge Steele's reference in denying the motion for the continuance to the order barring the expert simply didn't look at the rest of the record to determine that discovery had been open.
I'll take a try. Procedures weren't followed. Confusion was created. Nevertheless, Judge said that even if this was a mistake, the fact is she had 1 year to take his deposition. She never did it. He had a deadline in that motion to reopen discovery, November 19th, 2004, you must have your expert's report in. Almost 1 year later, she says, well, I'm not ready. I never took his deposition.
Dr. Garcia's deposition.
No, I'm talking about Dr. Lewin's deposition.
You're talking about a trial deposition. So at the time of the motion for reconsideration of the denial of the continuance, everybody understands that Judge Steele made a mistake that opened and that the parties were on notice that Dr. Lewin was the plaintiff's expert and that basis for denying the continuance was simply inaccurate. And so he rests his denial in the motion for reconsideration on a different ground, and that is that the plaintiff failed to take a trial deposition of Dr. Lewin, which would have removed the necessity of his physical attendance at the trial.
Based on confusion created by plaintiff's misuse of trial procedures, and the fact that she had 10 months to take that deposition
but
and never did.
Taking a trial deposition is not any sort of a requirement if you expect the witness to testify in person. And to dismiss with prejudice for failure to prosecute because an appointed attorney on a pro se prisoner case doesn't spend the money to take a trial deposition seems to violate the standards of a dismissal with prejudice for failure to prosecute in this circuit.
I would respond to that with a quote from Judge Rovner in a similar case, the Moffitt decision, where she points out that a litigant's day in court is the culmination of a lawsuit and that trial dates are increasingly precious commodities.
Yes,
what
but they never asked for any continuances until this one was changed by the judge, and had it not been changed that few days, that witness would have been available.
This is true. You should also take into account that she said that she could not proceed with her case, and yet this witness, Dr. Lewin, was a medical witness. What about that's only half of the case? We still have the rest of the case against the...
Well, but see, there's no history here of abusing adjournment of the trial date requests by the plaintiff. And actually, the defense got a trial continuance here, just granted, no problem.
This is true, Your
Honor. And the court changed the date a couple of times.
This is true, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Illinois Assistant Attorney General Evan Siegel for Jim Hanlon, Bob Doerr, and Alan Wisely. Whether or not Dr. Lawan was barred, there is ample evidence in the record to show that the district court made a reasonable decision in the circumstances. This is a case about a district court's ability to control its own docket, decisions that inherently must be viewed through the lens of discretion and affirmed, even if this court might believe it would rule differently in the same circumstances. There is no requirement under Moffitt, in which this case squarely fits, we believe, for there to be any prior history of delay. The issue is what happens when there's a sudden change in circumstances that the plaintiff himself didn't bring upon himself. Being prepared for trial on the eve of trial is perhaps the ultimate failure to prosecute under Rule 41B.
But there's evidence that the plaintiff was unprepared for trial. In fact, the evidence is to the contrary. The plaintiff was prepared for trial as that date had originally been set in July and rescheduled at your request to September. And it was only when the court altered the trial schedule that the issue regarding the doctor's availability arose.
I agree, Judge.
So it was completely outside the plaintiff's control.
That's correct, Judge Sykes. And in Moffitt, this court said that when circumstances arise at the 11th hour through no fault of the plaintiff, in that case, the plaintiff was hospitalized for substance abuse. And in the Schneider National Carriers case, it was also a similar circumstance of hospitalization. The issue is what the plaintiff does when they are forced to scramble, in the words of this court, in Moffitt. Continuance is not warranted when a plaintiff refuses to go to trial without a key witness if there are viable options, even if it's not ideal to go to trial and the plaintiff must scramble. Here there were options, but the plaintiff would not go to trial because he insisted on the live testimony of Dr. Lawan. This case could have stayed on track with expert testimony by deposition or by video deposition. When the plaintiff did nothing in the crucial 10-day window, actually, to take a trial deposition or to proceed, as my co-counsel has suggested, with the available 8 or 9 witnesses, dismissal was appropriate. Because district courts have the discretion to manage their own dockets, they're also in the best position to discern the dynamics of the litigation, the conduct of the attorneys and parties before them, as this court has held. The critical chronology is that on August 3rd, this case set the district court set the case for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and the following Tuesday, Dr. Lawan was scheduled for the fourth day of trial, the second Tuesday in the second week. But the record is unclear if by September 8th, nearly a month after the district court's scheduling order, plaintiff even confirmed that Dr. Lawan was coming to trial at all. And on September 8th, this case reached a crucial juncture. On that day, plaintiff learned two things. Trial would start a day earlier, on Monday, the 19th, and it wouldn't go into that second week when she expected Dr. Lawan to testify. She found out, after that change in scheduling, that Dr. Lawan was not available the week of the 19th. And significantly, on page 24 of the plaintiff's opening brief, we are told that Judge Steele's clerk asked the plaintiff to look into taking Dr. Lawan's deposition for trial when the court changed the trial date on September 8th, 11 days before trial. But the plaintiff didn't do anything with that and instead moved for continuance or voluntary dismissal because Dr. Lawan was unavailable the week of September 19th. The plaintiff has said nothing in his motion for continuance or in his motion for post-judgment relief about that period, that crucial period of September 9th to September 18th, which we submit as a critical and missed window of opportunity. On appeal, the plaintiff now argues about the expense having to go to Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, to take Dr. Lawan's deposition. For all concerned, we said we were available and willing to go. The co-defendant said the same thing, and if plaintiff didn't want to go to Wisconsin, a video deposition was possible. The argument that it was too expensive just doesn't make any sense because Dr. Lewan had to get from Wisconsin to East St. Louis for trial in short order. That would have entailed expenses as well. And as to the argument that plaintiff now raises for the first time in his reply brief that he didn't have the time to take that deposition in that window of period, that argument is forfeited because it appears for the first time in the reply brief.
What was the reason for the defense request for continuance?
The trial was rescheduled in June or July, I believe, because of the court's schedule. And the trial attorneys for my clients had a conflict with another trial, and I believe that was the same reason for co-defendants. Whether or not there was a deposition, there was the other option of forging ahead, but that didn't happen either. In short, the plaintiff didn't scramble at the moment that he needed to, as Moffitt counsels, and in these circumstances, dismissal was appropriate. We respectfully urge this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adam. How much time does counsel have? Thank you.
A couple of things that I want to point out in rebuttal. First of all, it may be easy to overlook the fact in this case there actually were two pretrial conferences, and at first I became confused when I was working on the brief until I straightened out and realized the pretrial order was originally filed in August 04. But that was a telephone pretrial conference with Magistrate Judge Frazier, at which he entered the order to bar. Subsequently, there was an open court pretrial conference with Judge Steele February 13th, 2005. And so at that time, the judge had before him the pretrial order showing Dr. Lewan as plaintiff's expert. And at that point, none of the defendants objected. So I wanted to point out that there was a long period of time after the motion to bar and after the motion to reopen was granted that the pretrial order stood before the court with Dr. Lewan as an expert with no one's objection. Also, just to make sure there's no confusion, this was a case filed pro se. I happened to get a letter from Mr. Gabriel and took the case on my own. I put the same effort into this case I would put into any case, regardless of whether it was someone in prison or someone else. Counsel mentioned the motion to reopen does not say that Dr. Lewan was plaintiff's expert, but he does fail to point out that attached to the motion was the plaintiff's answers to supplemental interrogatories, which disclosed Dr. Lewan in his opinions. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Counsel. Indeed, our thanks to all counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.